Good afternoon, everyone. Today is May 27th, 2015. This is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development, and we are gathered here today to talk about House Bill 441. Mr. Bender, we've got both a public hearing and a possible work session scheduled, and in the interest of time and the people that are here, I'm going to go ahead and start the hearing in a few minutes, and then after we get a quorum, I'll shift over to a work session. But would you like to give us a little background before we open the public hearing?
Certainly, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 441 comes to you with a due pass recommendation from the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. What this bill does is it authorizes the Cultural Trust to accept gifts, bequests, and other types of property as donations. The bill also changes the distribution of monies that are available to the Cultural Trust. The bill would increase both the expenditure distribution of grant funds and the expenditures for administration of the program. I would refer you to our fiscal impact statement that we have posted to OLIS for a description of the fiscal changes as a result of this bill. To summarize, though, in the highest levels, the bill would increase expenditures for the Cultural Trust by approximately $1.7 million per biennium over current law levels. That would be divided into an approximate increase for grants of about $1.1 million per biennium and of administration, and for administration, I'm sorry, of about half a million per biennium. The grant increase would go to a subset of Cultural Trust grant recipients. Those are the recipients of cultural development grants. The amount of funding available for the other categories of recipients by our estimate remains unchanged by this bill.
All right, thank you for that introduction. So I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing again on House Bill 441.
Oh, what is Senate Bill? I'm sorry.
You know, silly me, I just read the agenda and move along.
I'm so sorry, Representative. I'm not trying to be rude. Representative
Doherty. Yes, and Senator Steiner Hayward, Representative Doherty. So let me, we're going to rewind, and I'm going to close.
I just want to make sure I was here for the right bill.
I want to make sure that we don't do anything that's going to keep us from moving forward. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 41 because there is no such thing. Yes, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sure it was just a mental lapse, a reflection of who actually showed up here on time.
And I'm going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 441. For those of you that aren't here on a regular basis, let me explain that this is a joint committee, but we have reached a time in the legislative session where members are running all over the building on serious business, and I do mean that sincerely, that people are providing testimony on a variety of bills, just as we have two members that are here today testifying for us. And that is part of the reason that we don't have all the seats filled. But we will fill those seats, and we will move to a work session in a few moments. Meanwhile, Senator, Representative, welcome to Transportation and Economic Development. How can we help you today?
Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty, the representative for House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland. And I am the House representative to the Oregon Cultural Trust, and was appointed by the Speaker a couple of years ago to serve on the trust. And basically, I'm going to be very, very brief talking about, if those of you that have not been around for a long time, as to how the trust began. And part of it was, a great part of it was the vision of Ben Westlin, who, out of Central Oregon, who was a longtime legislator and passed away a few years ago. But the one thing about this was to be able to get money out to every corner of Oregon, whether it be art, music, theater, cultural, museum, tribal activities, all of this sort of thing. And through that vision came the Oregon Cultural Trust, and we have people talking about a lot more of the details. But what it is since that time, the distribution formula for getting grants out to cultural organizations has not increased. And so that's part of the bill, and that's what I'm speaking to today, and really encourage you to be able to get more of the arts money out to the four corners of Oregon, because we're in every county, we're in most of the major cities, and it's not only cultural groups, but also tribal groups, school groups, everything else, all nonprofits. So I would highly encourage you to look at the legislation that we have here and pass on the arts to the next generation.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator from District 17, and I've had the privilege of being the Senate representative on the Oregon Cultural Trust Board for just shy of 2 years now, and during that time have really become even more acquainted with the work that the Cultural Trust has done and continues to do. And as Representative Daugherty said, the Cultural Trust touches the lives of almost every Oregonian, whether they know it or not. And that, to some extent, is part of the importance of this bill. The Cultural Trust, and you'll hear soon from our relatively new director, Brian Rogers, who's really come on board and done remarkable due diligence by getting out all over the state for community meetings to emphasize the importance of, to really understand what culture, what arts, culture, history mean to Oregonians across our great state. To do this really well, we need to have adequate staff. They've been running on a shoestring for their entire existence.
Am I exaggerating?
No.
half a shoestring for their entire existence. But now, under the guidance of Mr. Rogers and his really, really able team, they have a great vision for where we can go in order to impact the lives of even more Oregonians on essentially almost exactly the same amount of money, just distributed differently, and allowing them to bring on board one more staffer, which is really important to do the work of the trust. I would point out that I believe firmly that people's lives are enriched when they have the opportunity to participate, whether as actual participants. One of the projects that's been funded in the past is a group on the Oregon coast that collects debris and turns it into sculptures that then grace the communities, right? So they're accomplishing multiple purposes at the same time. The lives of those who participate in projects such as these are really enriched. They know that they're contributing to their community by cleaning up the community, by getting debris that can hurt marine life or birds off of the beaches, and they're contributing to the beautification. Every time they walk past that piece of art, they say, I had a part of that. That art isn't just for professionals, it's for everyday people. When they can participate in community theater, whether watching it or being an actor or a stagehand or painting sets, that enriches their lives. When children have arts programs brought into schools, we know that they learn better, and yet our K-12 budgets currently don't support enough that we can have arts programs in every single school. Children learn better when they have arts as part of their school day. They are more likely to graduate on time. They are more likely to go on to post-secondary education. They are more likely to become wage-earning, tax-paying Oregonians. So for every single reason you can think of, Representative Daugherty and I strongly urge her support of Senate Bill 441 to give the Cultural Trust the leeway it needs to reach out to Oregonians across our state to enhance the heritage of the state, along with our partners like the Oregon Heritage Commission. We have so much that we can do in Oregon with the arts and with culture, and we can do it even better with the passage of Senate Bill 441. Happy to take any questions.
Well, thank you so much for your testimony, and thank you so much for your service on behalf of this institution. Any questions for the senator or the representative?
No questions.
Thank you so very much.
And before I call our next panel, Mr. Bender, I just wanted to ask, since the agenda listed this as a House bill, do we have any notice problems in terms of posting this bill today?
No, you do not, sir. This was just an error on this particular version of the agenda. The bill is properly posted and noticed for your work today.
Just a worthwhile question to ask.
No. We apologize for that error.
Yes, Senator.
And I would confirm that on the agenda that I brought in, it said Senate Bill 441.
All right, thank you. So it's just a printed document that we have here. All right, I'm not sure what order people would like to come up in. Mr. Rogers, who would you like to join you, or are you just going to lead off solo today?
Yeah, that would be fine.
All right, please.
Folks come up.
That's okay.
Chair Gumberg and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Rogers, and I'm the executive director of the Oregon Cultural Trust. And good afternoon, and thank you for this opportunity to discuss Senate Bill 441. The Cultural Trust was created about 12 years ago to grow and support culture in Oregon, and our mission is to lead in building an environment in which culture organizations are sustained and valued as a core part of a vibrant Oregon. And we act on that mission by raising and distributing funds and grants and services to every county each and every year. The trust is unique to Oregon. No other state has a publicly driven cultural trust such as this. The trust plays a vital role in building Oregon communities through sustaining, developing, and increasing opportunities for Oregonians to participate in diverse arts, heritage, history, and humanities. A lot has changed since the trust was created 12 years ago, and Senate Bill 441 seeks to give some flexibility to the trust about how funds are allocated and the administration of the trust. Modernizing the trust will enable the board of directors to review and implement policies and practices that respond to the changing environment in which we operate and help us better serve the state. The trust board is comprised of 9 members and 2 legislative members who you just heard from. Over the last couple of years, the board has been discussing the allocation percentages and the effectiveness of what we do with what was originally created in the comparison to our current reality. The bill was carefully constructed to respond to our growth and our ability to effectively address the needs of cultural organizations and their service to Oregonians. Last year, the trust received $4.3 million from 14,000 donors. Over the last couple of years, we have been on a growth rate of about 4.5% from year to year. Currently, there are about 1,400 organizations that are eligible to receive direct contributions from donors to the trust. And currently, 58% of the revenue received each year is placed into the trust account, and that last year was about $2.6 million. The remaining 42%, which is about $1.8 million, is distributed in three areas. The first area is our cultural participation grants, or our county coalition grants. And last year, we made 47 grants to each county, and that also included 7 tribes. And that equated to about $540,000 in funding and leveraged $1.7 million in the local activities. The coalitions receive allocations from the trust to grant to regional cultural projects, and this year over 450 local projects were funded by the coalitions with trust funds. We also have the cultural development grants, which we do directly from our agency. And last year, we made 48 grants for a total of $540,000. And those leveraged $14 million in the local economy. We also work closely with 5 cultural partners, the Oregon Arts Commission, Heritage Commission, Historical Society, Humanities, and State Historic Preservation Office. The proposed modernization would give a range for the board of directors to consider. So 40 to 50% of the revenue received each year could be allocated to the trust account. And then 50 to 60% could be allocated to funding and services in the 3 areas I just described. This would enable the trust board to review current circumstances and respond within the range that we are proposing. Currently, the trust is able to allocate 7.5% of the funds that are distributed each year for administration. Last year, that equated to $144,000. With the increased distribution and the ability to allocate up to $400,000 per year on administration, we would add a full-time office manager to position. This position would support the donation process, grant making, and most importantly, services to coalitions and partners. We began a long-range planning process last fall that included 14 town meetings across the state with over 500 people attending. The process also included a board retreat and input from key stakeholders like legislators and other funders. And some of the big issues we heard were that the trust needed to increase direct grant making and also increase services to coalitions and partners. Our current structure, our current administrative structure would not permit us to do that. Simultaneously, last fall, we also started conducting 9 regional meetings with all of the coalitions to gather information and feedback about their needs as coalition members. 160 people representing those coalitions were present. We currently are prioritizing the issues and challenges facing the coalitions and have retained a contractor to begin to work on some of them. With the ability to increase the administration, we would be in a position to address the lack of service and technical assistance needs of the coalitions on an ongoing, consistent basis and address more of the challenges, such as stronger relationships between the trust and the coalitions and communications, work with them on outreach to reach new potential cultural projects, their grants management, and, of course, cultural planning. Each of the coalitions is required to put together a cultural plan. So to summarize, we're looking at 3 major areas in this bill. One is to fully fund and correctly fund, if you will, our administration. The other one is to increase our flexibility for the board to respond to the ever-changing environment in which we operate. And finally, to increase our support and service to the communities across the state. Thank you very much for this opportunity. And, of course, I would entertain any questions that you may have.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Johnson.
Nothing like blowing in light and immediately having an opinion. And as soon as I say this, I'm going to leave. There are a couple of issues that you raised, and this is something that I recall from the day of the big think.
Yes.
When a number of cultural advocates were all in a hermetically sealed room all day long. And that was the question of, as you increase administrative costs, it reduces the corpus. As you spend more out of the corpus, you reduce the corpus. As that occurs, you, with giving more grants, probably will be inclined to give smaller grants to more people. And I would strenuously urge the trust to take a look at some kind of a construct that allows the money to be leveraged and allows different recipients to prepare for a grant. Let's assume that the Elizabethan Theater in Ashland needs a new roof. Not an insignificant undertaking. Rather than standing in the queue and getting $2,500 from you every year for 10 years, wouldn't it be nice if there was some methodology that would deliver to them $250,000 in some predictable way, with the requirement that they go out and raise another $250,000 from the people that think that that's a good thing to do? I don't think it's sustainable to continue to have applicants come to the trust saying, give us money, give us money. There isn't enough money for the need out there. Mm-hmm. And were you guys to get on some kind of a program where you were looking at big capital projects with enough advance notice that your recipients could do some of their homework, I think you would do a great service to institutions that are finding it more difficult rather than less difficult to exist on the kindness of strangers when the kindness of strangers comes in little dribs and drabs. I think it would also reduce the temptation to have groups come in here outside of the pattern of the cultural trust and try to exercise political muscle to cue jump over others. I don't think we've regularized how we pay for the arts and culture in this state. And I will stand my record up against anybody's as far as being an advocate with CHAMPS going way back. But the point of the story is I don't think you can continue to exist on giving a multiplicity of little grants without taking a look at the bigger needs that exist. And I'm going to support the bill, but I worry about the direction that you're heading.
Senator Johnson and members of the committee, thank you very much for those comments and questions. One of the things that this bill also, one of the inherent qualities of this bill is to make sure that the corpus continues to grow. And this is about probably a slower growth than has currently been occurring. But with that flexibility, the board would be able to, if, for example, we're having a really good year with a lot of donations, we would be able to add more back into the corpus. The point you made about the capital, working capital for organizations is near and dear to my heart. I think that's oftentimes a very difficult thing for organizations to secure. And our placement within Business Oregon is key to exploring that in the next year or two, to look at the business loan programs that they have, loan forgiveness, if organizations meet the benchmarks. That is also balanced with the struggle that all nonprofits have with the ability to raise operating support from year to year. We just came back from Burns last week, and there was a big symposium with Harney County Arts Performing Arts and Education Center to build a fairly substantial performing arts and education center there. And one of the big things that they were talking about was the sustainability of continuing to operate the center once it was built. So it's a huge issue with nonprofits. So I feel that it's extremely important not only to help leverage funding, but also to create the ability for organizations and projects to grow and be sustained. So it is that balance.
One other comment. My other concern is development for the Cultural Trust was predicated on, God bless him, Ben Westland's vision that there would be a sale of a substantial state asset that would provide a major corpus and the trust could live off the interest plus other donations. But it has been my experience that the trust is not necessarily good at development in the traditional sense of development. I look at the folks that are raising money for the Knight Cancer Challenge right now. Those guys are animals, and I say that with affection and respect. They're raising $500 million, but they know how to do development. I don't know how the trust would fare absent the tax credit, and that's something that we need to keep in mind. But having communities feel as though they're part of the franchise by raising some of the money to match the trust development or contribution to local cultural institutions, I think helps create that bonding relationship that drives towards the sustainability that you just talked about. If it's constantly just come back to the trust and we get another little pittance and we go out and we scratch around for a while, having some kind of a development program that lets these institutions leverage and develop their own sustainability would be a great gift to culture and art in Oregon, in my opinion.
Senator Johnson and members of the committee, when we traveled around the state doing our town meetings for the planning process and the county coalitions, it became abundantly clear that there's a degree of confusion about how the trust works and how our partners and coalitions can communicate that the how the trust works mechanically and also the good work that we do. The staff is here, and we've been working very closely with a firm to help refresh our brand and to clarify how we can work with organizations to spread the word about the Cultural Trust. The director of OPP is here today, and I'm sure he'll talk today about the number of donors that OPP gets and versus the number of donors that we get. It's proportionally OPB gets a lot more than we do, and our goal is to work with organizations like OPB to encourage people to not only donate directly to OPB, but also to the Cultural Trust. The trust is only 12 years old. It does take time to build that a commitment to who we are in the community, and we're dedicated to continue down that path to figure out the best possible way to make it as clear and simple as possible.
Other questions? Yes, Representative.
I was wondering if you could tell me the total administrative costs, including all salaries and benefits of your of the trust.
Well, it's about Representative, what's it, and members of the committee. Right now, it's about $940,000. Keep in mind that a good part of that $340,000 is the license plate revenue, which by statute is used for the marketing and promotion of the trust.
So 940, did you say?
Yes, and 340 of that is used for license plate revenue that's directly used for marketing and promotion. And $144,000 is the percentage that we receive directly from the revenue earned each year. And there's an agreement with the Oregon Arts Commission to help out administratively as well with $200,000.
Okay.
Follow-up?
Yes. And so what is your new ask then total was it an additional $400,000?
I'm sorry, Representative, what's it? I misspoke. Currently, our administrative allocation is $680,000.
$680,000. Okay.
With adding Senate Bill 441,
okay,
it would increase to $940,000.
Okay. And that's one additional full-time position, right?
Yes.
And that includes benefits, PERS contribution, everything in that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Yes, Representative Emery.
Follow up to Representative Witsit's thing. Is that the -2 amendment? Is that the increased administrative costs that you're talking about, but with 441?
Mr. Bender, do you have, please.
I may respond to that. The amount of the increase in the -2 amendments is the increase that's needed to the base budget that is already in Business Oregon's budget bill in order to allow expenditure of the additional funds that would be spent under this bill. However, it is not the amount of additional funds. We are projecting a total of $1,664,000 in additional expenditures as a result of the bill. The reason why the expenditure limitation increase in the amendments is only a little over $300,000 is that there is approximately $1.3 million in the budget now that exceeds what they would actually spend under current law. There's excess limitation. This amendment, if you approved it, would increase the limitation but eliminate the excess. So that's the reason for the major discrepancy. Again, to provide a little more information on Representative Witsit's questions, as we've noted in our fiscal impact statement, the total increase of about $1,664,000 can be divided into two broad categories of the amount of increase in grants and the amount of increase in administration. The amount of increase in grants, and if you're looking at our fiscal impact statement, this is in the third to the bottom paragraph, is approximately $1.14 million. The amount of increase in administrative expenses is approximately $523,000. Of that, only a portion of that is for the new position. The rest of it would be available for marketing or other services and supplies.
Other questions, please.
So, and thanks again, Mr. Rogers, for the presentation here. When I look on your website, there's a link on there that says to make a gift of stock certificates there. Why is this needed in the bill then, the part that says that you can donate stock or land or other financial instruments?
Representative Nierman and members of the committee. Can I just ask for a little bit more clarification? I'm sorry.
On your website, when I go to your website, there's a I wonder if I can find it. There's like a drop down menu that says donate stock here.
Yes. Right? Yes, yeah. We do accept stock donations.
So part of the bill is to allow you to accept stock donations. What's the is there a problem being solved or?
I think, and I may be wrong on this, but I think it wasn't articulated in the original bill. So I think this is an addition to make that clear that we do, in fact, accept stocks.
Okay.
I think that's the only part of it, yes.
Okay. And then, so right now, the Oregon Cultural Trust can donate between 0 and 42% of its income, meaning donations and the interest income or whatever kind of income it gets off of its trust, can donate that to whatever, can issue grants out of that money. It's between 0 and 42%. And the bill changes that from a minimum of 50 to 60%. So what's the philosophy of doing that? Is that, that's going to have the effect of slowing the growth of the trust? Is that the intention, or is the intention to get more money out in the communities, or just talk about the thinking behind that?
Representative Nieren and members of the committee, it's the latter. It's to enable us to respond to community needs at a greater rate. Not only more direct grants, but work with our coalitions and partners, as well as the service areas of the state that heretofore have been underserved. Just to clarify, currently under the current statute, we're allocating exactly 42%. We're mandated to. We don't have a range from 0 to 42. Oh, okay. It's exactly 42. So by creating this range, we're able to respond to changes in the environment. So if we do have a really, really good year, we may want to increase the percentage that goes back into the trust account. And if we're not having such a great year, recession or whatever hits, that we may want to allocate more to grants and services to make sure that we're sustaining organizations and projects.
Could I do just one more?
Another, please.
So, then on your website also, it says that, and you might correct my numbers here, you gave out $1.8 million in grants in the last year. Actually, I don't have the time period there. But if I go through your, you have kind of a featured grants on your website there. It's a little bit less than $700,000 that are on there. Is there a way that I could get a list of all the grants that you've made?
Absolutely. Representative Nieren and members of the committee, we will forward a list of the direct grants that we make and grants to our coalitions and to our partners.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Good. Representative Whitson.
So I'm not really familiar with the Oregon Cultural Trust, specifically how it's governed. It says by a 13-member board of directors, and I was wondering, by whom are they selected and representing what areas of the state?
We have 9 at-large members and 2 legislative members. The 9 at-large members are appointed by the governor, they represent a pretty wide range of folks from across the state. For example, Gail Yamasaki from down in Klamath Falls, and Chuck Sams from La Grande, and we have a few other folks from around the state.
So when your grants are awarded, does the entire board or a majority of the board decide where the grants go and the amount of grants? I assume you get applications for grants from each county, or are they districts, or what? And then how do you decide who gets those?
Representative Whitson and members of the committee, for the coalition grants, there's a base amount. Each county or tribe gets a base of $6,000 plus a percentage generated from the population of that service region, the county. So in a lot of cases, the rural, smaller county or smaller population counties receive a much higher per capita than other counties, more urban counties. Direct grants that we make, I think we have a very, very substantial citizen-driven decision-making process, which includes peer review panels. So we have peers that adjudicate applications to us and make recommendations to our board. So our board will look at the the scoring and the ranking that comes out of each peer review panel and act on those recommendations.
So are the peer review panels out of the regions then, like mm-hmm. Eastern Oregon or Southern or Southeastern Oregon or Northeastern? I'm just concerned that, that culture is defined differently in different parts of the state. And I would say that culture for 3/4 of the geography of the state of Oregon is culturally different than Portland or the Willamette Valley, mm-hmm. Salem North. And so I just want to make sure that, since this is an entire state, that we recognize cultures that may, or cultural diversity that includes Western, if you will, and rural, and things that may not seem as important in Portland.
Representative Whitson and members of the committee, I couldn't agree more. I've been completely amazed at the diversity of cultural activities going on across the state. And we work very hard to make sure that our panels are representative of not only all geographic areas, but other diversities as well. So we have a lot of different points of view that are part of the process. And that's one of the great things about the county coalitions is that the adjudication is local decision-making. So each county coalition assembles their own peer review panel to allocate funding to projects in their service region, their county, based on their own values. So that's a really important part of the county coalition's work.
So that would be the 6,000 that each county gets then?
6,000 plus the percentage for population.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, we've got several people that have traveled quite some way to join us today, and I can't read all of the writing clearly, so let me say Catherine, Steve, and Peter, if you'd like to come on up. Welcome to the committee.
And thank you.
As is our practice, I'm not sure who wants to go first, but if you'd introduce yourself, and we'd be very pleased to hear from you.
Thank you, Representative Gomberg and members of the committee, and good afternoon. My name is Peter Bellotta, and in my professional capacity, I'm the executive director of Chamber Music Northwest. We're celebrating our 45th anniversary season this summer with our Summer Music Festival, and during that time, we've grown to be one of the largest chamber music festivals in the United States, and one of Oregon's largest classical music organizations as well. This year, we'll reach about 75,000 people throughout every corner of the state of Oregon. Certainly, some of them come to our concerts and participate in our education and outreach activities, but a far larger number are beneficiaries of broadcasts of our performances that reach just about every corner of Oregon. In fact, tomorrow afternoon at exactly this time, if you tune into All Classical, which I'm not saying you'll have the chance to, given your schedules, but there'll be a live performance by one of our world-class ensembles, the Ambient String Quartet, that will be on Thursday at 3 on All Classical, broadcast to about two-thirds of the state's population. Now, I should mention that in addition to representing the Chamber Music Northwest, I'm also a board member for the Cultural Advocacy Coalition, and I serve on a number of boards of arts service organizations throughout the state that serve primarily small and mid-sized arts and cultural organizations. And on their behalf, I want to express my strong support for Senate Bill 441. Now, truth be told, I'm not a native Oregonian. You can probably hear my Minnesota accent. I came here about 10 years ago after working for 20 years in arts leadership roles in Minnesota and Ohio, two states that are widely lauded as some of the most visionary in state support for the arts. I also served on a number of national boards and committees for national arts organizations, such as Opera America and the National League of Resident Theaters. So I had great familiarity before moving here with state arts funding throughout the nation, and yet, coming to Oregon, nothing quite prepared me for the astounding nature of the Oregon Cultural Trust. I was simply stunned by that discovery. Never had I encountered such a visionary and innovative way for citizens and the state to partner to promote arts and culture. And in the 12 years since the fund's establishment, it hasn't been matched anywhere. It is still the envy of 49 states in this country. Now, yet, as an Oregon arts leader, I'm struck by the fact that the Oregon Cultural Trust is also very limited in its grant-making ability. And this is because the original legislation, as you've heard, severely limits both the trust resources for administration and the amount that they can make in grants. As a result, each year, only a small number of arts and cultural organizations like mine actually receive cultural development grants, with many grants going to largest and best-funded organizations that have the capacity to prepare a very competitive proposal. Last year, of the 1,400 cultural nonprofits in the state eligible for cultural trust funding, and the nearly $4.3 million that was contributed to the trust, as Brian mentioned, only $540,000 was able to be granted to arts organizations for cultural development projects in their communities. That's a mere 15% of the funds that were received by the trust. And of those, constituted 48 organizations that received grants, and many of them for small amounts, as Senator Johnson mentioned. Chamber Music Northwest is a perfect example of this dichotomy between the bold vision of the trust and the limited resources it has to make grants. We're a mid-size organization with a $1.6 billion budget, so we don't quite fit into that large organization category, but we're larger than many and the vast majority of arts and cultural organizations in the state. Yet, in the last 5 years, we've received just one grant from the Oregon Cultural Trust this season for a project we're doing this summer to promote new music, including two commissions of new music from Oregon composers. Now, we're not alone in this regard, for there are hundreds of arts and cultural organizations throughout every community, county, and legislative district in the state that have received little or no support from the Cultural Trust. Many small and mid-sized arts organizations and cultural organizations have never received any trust support. It's not because of a lack of vision or of worthy programs or projects. It's not because the trust's small staff don't make a yeoman's effort to make certain that it reaches every corner of the state. Rather, it's because of a lack of resources. Senate Bill 441 helps increase the Oregon Cultural Trust impact by increasing the funds that it has available to make grants. It makes small technical changes, giving the trust board authority to set the amount of annual distributions within a reasonable range, to dedicate greater resources to administration and promotion of the trust so that more Oregonians know that they can contribute, and to adjust how available funds are distributed among competitive grant programs, support for cultural coalitions, and grants to cultural partners. Now, while small, these changes will have a dramatic impact on the number and size of grants that the trust can award on an annual basis. It will mean more trust support for small and mid-sized arts organizations that have visionary programs and projects that better serve local communities. And it will broaden the trust impact, creating increased arts and cultural access for Oregonians and Oregon communities in every corner of the state, and generally budget neutral. That's more grants of a larger size for more arts and cultural organizations in more communities that benefit more Oregonians throughout the entire state. That's what we call a win-win, win-win-win. If you weren't counting, that's five wins. As an arts leader and a frequent participant in arts and cultural activities throughout the entire state of Oregon, a supporter of the trust in every single year since I have moved to Oregon and at the highest possible level, and as a proud citizen of this state and our commitment to arts and culture, I urge you to support Senate Bill 441 to create greater arts and cultural opportunities for our citizens. Thank you for your support of this bill and the arts and culture throughout our state.
Thank you, Mr. Bellotta. Any questions? All right, who would be next?
Okay.
I'm Catherine Rickbone. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Coast Council for the Arts, based in Newport. And I'm here today talking on two elements. First of all, representing cultural coalitions and some perspective there. And then also as a grant recipient of the Oregon Cultural Trust grant, community grants. So two aspects for today. So concerning the cultural coalitions. My organization, the Oregon Coast Council for the Arts, is the fiscal sponsor for the Lincoln County Cultural Coalition. I've been co-chair at different times in the past 8 years. I'm currently treasurer, and I'm also a grants administrator for the Lincoln County Cultural Coalition. I don't know how many of you know about Lincoln County. It's pretty edgy. It's right there before you drop off into the water. It's rural. Some people would say it's isolated, not a lot of roads going over to the coast or to Lincoln County. Does have the Hatfield Marine Science Center, the aquarium. Lots of tourists come to see the ocean. With the school district, we have 20% homeless children, have a population of about 76,000 people. But in spite of or because of all of these positives or challenges, the arts flourish in Lincoln County because of the Oregon Cultural Trust and the coalition funds that are dispersed every year to Lincoln County. I thought I would indicate to you just a little bit about the coalition's goals when we re-grant cultural trust monies. First of all, it's to improve the access of cultural experiences. Secondly, to raise the cultural awareness of youth preschool through 12. And third, to facilitate infrastructure improvements throughout all the groups that exist in our county, and I know similar coalitions have somewhat similar criteria. So we may be giving money to the Lincoln City Senior Center so they can have hands-on fused glass workshops. We may be giving money to the Newport Symphony Orchestra to support a program offering students the opportunity to play side-by-side with Salem Youth Symphony Philharmonic Orchestra at the Newport Performing Arts Center, however. In South County, one of us Productions Theater Group, we're helping them replace a worn stage curtain at the Yahats Commons. We may be at St. James Santiago School helping purchase musical instruments for kindergarten through fifth grade. Toledo Public Library for a creativity camp for youth 10 through 17, you get the idea of the broad range of where cultural grants go. We always get hundreds and actually thousands of dollars more in requests through the grants for all the various programs throughout the county than there is money for. We, however, try to spread the money between youth or among youth, adult, and senior programs. We try to have a good mix of arts, heritage, and humanities as we are dispersing the monies from the Oregon Cultural Trust to Lincoln County Arts, Heritage, and Humanities. The ability to have some more funds along this line to disperse would be very welcome, and I know that this is the case as I talk with other coalitions up and down the coast, because actually OCCA is also the regional arts council for the 363 miles of the Oregon coast. So some things to think about concerning coalition activities and what we do. It is very participatory. We have members on the coalition from all throughout the county, and as Brian mentioned a little while ago, the fact that when we come to grant adjudication, that the coalition members represent a lot of different elements and people throughout the county. The second topic to give a little more insight from on the ground relates to the Trust's cultural development grants. I might say that most arts cannot be outsourced. Okay? You can't have them happen in India or China or places like that. They can't be outsourced. And what we're talking about here, whether it's with coalition dollars or grant dollars, also deals with job creation. And I know all of you on this committee are interested in that, because I read all of your bios, and they all say something about your interest in job creation. Also, a lot of these monies that are dispersed by the Oregon Cultural Cultural Trust, they stay local in many regards. Not in all, but many cases, the money stays local. So as I relate something about a cultural development grant that the Oregon Arts or the Oregon Coast Council for the Arts received recently, again based in Newport, and my organization manages the Newport Performing Arts Center and the Newport Visual Arts Center. Right now, the Performing Arts Center is in a multi-year $4.3 million capital campaign, and we've done a variety of things so far, and we're still working. We're going up to probably 2020 before it's all done. But the very appreciated grant that we received from the Oregon Cultural Trust on a development grant was for the lighting of the Alice Silverman Theater and also for some signage out in front of the building. I don't know how many of you have seen the Performing Arts Center, but it's in historic Nye Beach. It's over on a very highly visible corner, and so many things happen at the PAC. We may have your group come down sometime. But there's only place for two signs, and that's it. So there may be two or three or four other things happening that week, but, you know, you can only advertise a little bit of it. So having this money is very important for marketing awareness of culture, if you will. And I might indicate, unfortunately, Senator Johnson had to leave, but the Oregon Coast Council for the Arts matched and exceeded the funds that we received from the trust for our signage and our lighting portion of what we're doing with our, you know, our capital campaign. And we, of course, have had other grants and matching opportunities. The impact of monies goes way far beyond just the dollars of what you spend to purchase this or repair that or update 25-year-old lighting that's inefficient and there aren't parts for anymore. As in all communities throughout Oregon, I've just been hearing of wonderful examples in Burns. But over in Newport, there's a lot of youth. The Performing Arts Center is their home. So to speak, and they grow up there. They're there after school rehearsing, and one of our alumni, who is now an international opera singer with the Darmstadt Opera in Germany, says, "When people tell me that I look like a natural on stage, I owe the compliment to the arts community in Newport, since without them, I wouldn't have had a stage to stand on." And that's what the impact of the Cultural Trust money does for these communities. Sorry, I wasn't going to do that. Okay. So, okay, I've... Any questions? any questions on that, please?
Any questions? Ms. Rickbone, thank you. Thank you so much for all you do for keeping the culture of arts on the coast as vibrant as it is. Mm-hmm. But I should add that some of us don't think of Newport as the last thing you trip over before you fall off the continent. We think of it as the home of the largest ocean in the world.
Yeah, that's right. And I might add, when people do come to the coast for whatever reason, you know, the arts really drive culture. Tourism as well, and we do studies about the economic impact in Newport of the arts, and the Performing Arts Center and the Visual Arts Center in last FY generated over $807,000 in economic impact for the area.
Well, so, committee members, I'm sure you can imagine what kind of impact this woman has in a small community. Mr. Bass.
Thank you, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. My name is Steve Bass. I'm the President and CEO of Oregon Public Broadcasting. Very happy to testify in support of Senate Bill 441. OPB received support from the Oregon Cultural Trust for our televised history series, Oregon Experience, which we co-produce with our colleagues at the Oregon Historical Society. And for the last nine seasons, this series has helped Oregonians better understand how we got to now. The Trust has also provided support to our daily radio program, Think Out Loud. In addition, I serve on the boards of several cultural organizations, including the Oregon Symphony, the Portland Summer Ensembles, and the Oregon East Symphony in Pendleton. Through this work, I see the important impact that the Oregon Cultural Trust has on arts and cultural organizations in urban, rural, and in-between settings. I fully support the changes to the cultural trust that are proposed in this bill, raising the minimum distribution from 42% to a minimum of 50% and providing the trust board some discretion to increase it to as much as 60% of the proceeds will certainly enhance the mission of the trust. I think this flexibility is wise policy for several reasons. First, it will provide discretion to the board to tailor its grant making to fit economic and other circumstances. During the most recent very deep recession in Oregon, which still is impacting many communities to this day, the trust was very constrained in its grant making at a time when other sources of support were dwindling. Giving the trust board greater flexibility will provide a greater safety net for Oregon's arts and cultural economy in future downturns. Raising the cap will also enable the trust to potentially support more organizations and more communities. For organizations like the Oregon East Symphony in Pendleton, a grant of, say, $5,000 or $10,000, if we could reach that, from the Oregon Cultural Trust makes a significant difference, as other sources of funding within that community are very limited. It will also potentially allow the trust to increase the higher end of its grants, which currently are capped at about $35,000 annually. This could have a very positive effect on giving to the trust, as the larger organizations, such as the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, the Portland Art Museum, the Oregon Symphony, and indeed OPB, would have greater incentive to communicate proactively to their donors about the benefits of also giving to the trust. I'd also add that we are very fortunate to have a strong board for the Oregon Cultural Trust, as well as a very strong leader in Brian Rogers. Giving them the tools to do their job even more effectively will have a very positive effect on Oregon's cultural economy. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of this bill.
Thank you so much. Any questions for Mr. Bass? Well, I just wanted to say thank you for what you do, and in particular for the Rick Steves series. My wife got all the CDs with her last contribution.
Excellent.
And I've been using them with my exercise machine every morning. I hiked through Tuscany with Rick just this morning.
Hopefully you will go there soon.
All right. Thank you again. Any questions for this panel? Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
Mr. Campbell, were you going to testify today?
I can make a very brief comment.
And is there anybody else who came to testify this afternoon? All right. Well, welcome, Mr. Campbell.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Campbell. I'm here on behalf of the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. You've heard from some of our members already. However, a couple of comments just to finish up why this bill is important to cultural advocacy in the state of Oregon, one of which is that when the Cultural Trust was originally created, it was hoped that the corpus would be able to be grown through some property that the state had. That has not flushed out as we had hoped, and as a result, the growth of the trust has not increased because of that. And so we're basically trying to figure out a way to grow the trust with the income that is coming in, and it's just not large enough to do that well. So that is a long-term solution. We're going to have to try and find a solution too. In the meantime, it makes sense to give the board the flexibility to get additional resources out without affecting the corpus so that that money is going out to Oregon's cultural activities. The second thing I wanted to mention is that this bill is necessary because it clarifies and frees up the Cultural Trust to do additional efforts to try and raise additional money and not just rely upon interest but also earnings through other means. That gives them the go-ahead, the green light, the green light, as it were. Thank you. As to Mr. Representative Nierman's comment earlier, some of these things we're already doing, but this clarifies that we actually can be doing them without worrying about the language that's in the statute. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? No questions. Okay. Thank you so much. Well, if there's no one else here to testify, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 441, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 441. Mr. Bender?
Thank you, subcommittee members. Legislative Fiscal Office has requested and brought forward to you the Senate Bill 441-2 amendments. What these amendments do is they do not change any of the existing language in the bill. However, they add a budget adjustment for the Cultural Trust to the bill so that if it does become law, the trust would have the expenditure limitation needed to make the distribution of grants and administrative expenses that the bill would therefore authorize. So that would put the budget decision with the policy bill. This particular request, these amendments increase the other funds expenditure limitation for Arts and Cultural Trust by $306,770. And we do recommend, if you want to move this bill, that you do adopt these amendments to allow the necessary budget adjustments.
Any questions, committee members? Yes, Senator Monroe. Yes, I'm going to entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 441.
That's my motion.
All right, I thought it might be. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Motion carries. Then, committee, I would entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 441 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Senator Monroe makes that motion. Is there any discussions? Representative Nierman.
So has this bill been to the Committee on Tax Credits?
It has not.
Is it going there?
This bill would go to the floor for Ways and Means. This would not make any adjustment to tax credits. It does not. The bill is not anticipated to change the amount of money coming to the cultural trust. It just allows the trust to use more of those receded monies for both grants and for administrative expenses than is the current practice.
So if I can follow. So I'm not understanding then, because there's talk about increasing the caps. Doesn't that increase the amount of money that someone can donate under the tax credit, or am I not understanding that right?
That I'm not sure exactly what you're referring to, but the statute that establishes the tax credits for donations to the cultural trust is not being amended by this bill. The current statutes allow, I believe, a credit of up to $500 on an individual return or $1,000 on a joint return. The credit is allowed if the taxpayer also has a contribution of at least that much, that amount, to qualified cultural organizations in the tax year. None of that is being changed
okay.
by this bill.
All right. Thank you. Right.
Good question. Yes, Representative Whitson.
I was wondering why the Dash 2 amendments weren't actually part of the original bill.
It is not necessary for the Dash 2 amendments to be part of the bill. And it's you could pass this bill out without those amendments. The reason why we are recommending that is the passage of this bill would require an adjustment to the cultural trust's budget in order for essentially the bill to become, for the trust to be able to do what the bill was allowing the trust to do. Otherwise, if there was not an adjustment, the agency would not be able to make the expenditures that the bill is permitting. It is our recommendation as LFO that since those expenditures would only be allowed to the trust if the bill becomes law, that the expenditure adjustment sort of be included with the bill so that they both stand or fall on their own. So this will allow legislators to make the decision on the policy change and the budget change simultaneously in the same bill.
So if I may follow up, so the Dash 2 amendments, the money comes from the general fund?
The monies for the cultural trust come from two primary sources. One source is donations that people make to the trust. The other primary source is the sale of cultural trust license plates, which are already dedicated to administration by existing statute. That is also not changed by this bill. What is changed is that the use of the donations is changed. The donations, again, are other funds because they are private donations. However, we do note that most of these donations taxpayers are taking a dollar for dollar tax credit, so it represents a reduction in general fund revenues, though it doesn't show up in expenditures as general fund.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. Any other questions? Any other comments? We have a motion before us. Is there an objection? Any objections? Hearing none, motion carries. Let's note that Senator Johnson, Representative Reed are excused. And Mr. Bender, I would be happy to carry this to full and to the House. Would anyone like to take that to the Senate? Senator Monroe is going to be the carrier on the Senate side.
Thank you.
And with that being said, I'm going to close the work session on 441. Is there anything else that we need to cover today?
I would just like to mention to the subcommittee members that tomorrow you're scheduled to have a work session on the OLCC budget. This will include the portions of the budget except for the Measure 91. So LFO recommendations will be available on that portion of the budget. Later at some point when some of the issues relating to implementation of Measure 91 are decided, that will be brought forward before the bill will be passed on to full committee.
So Mr. Bender is discreetly suggesting that we do not have a hearing, we have a work session, and we can't begin it until we have a quorum. Yes, do you have a question, Representative?
No, that's...
All right, anything else for the good of the order? And thank you, everyone. We are adjourned. We are adjourned.